is preeminently the time to speak the truth, the whole truth, frankly and boldly. That the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Today's show is brought to you by Paul's Automotive. Paul's Automotive is located at 634 Route 46 in Kenville, New Jersey. If you want a master mechanic who has over 38 years of experience with quality work, he's your guy to call. He strives to keep you in a safe and reliable vehicle, and his goal is to make your experience as pleasurable and convenient as possible. It's not like you're dropping your car off and you're getting somebody named Joe Blow who's working on your car. Paul's the guy that'll be working on your car, and he gives you a reasonable price. We're proud to say that he's helped Autism Radio many times to keep our vehicle safe and reliable on the road. So he's your guy to give a call today at 973-584-1035. Remember, he's always committed to quality, and he's pleasurable to work with, and he is very helpful. So give him a call today at 973-584-1035. 1035 today.
Welcome back to AutismRadio.org, home of the world's first autism support radio network and proud 501c3 charitable organization, helping families challenged with autism every day get services they desperately need. Please help us make a difference in the autism community and find it in your heart to support 1 in 88 families in America today. Donate directly at AutismDonation.org. Now, stay tuned for a special broadcast of Hope Saves the Day with autism activist, super dad and author of The Spectrum Diet, Master Chef and the Hope Man himself, your host, Paul Simmons.
Thank you for that great introduction. As always, it's great to be back on another edition of Hope Saves the Day. I'd like to welcome back to the show my co-host today, Lynn Glukoff. Welcome back.
Hi, Paul.
Hey, it's great to have you back today, Lynn. We have a lot of stuff to cover today. First off, we're going to start with this great tips on actually spotting autism at 18 months. And I think this is very, obviously we know this is very important to early detection, especially when toddlers have siblings with autism. It's really critical, Lynn. You know, we're learning, obviously, you know, you, I, and the rest of the world, we're learning more about autism every year, and we're seeing how families can really flourish and when a child actually has autism. And that's why it's so important to have screenings in early life for a child who may be at risk, or the ways in which early intervention before the age 5. And Lynn, this is your area, is early intervention, so you know you could even shed some light too.
Okay.
You know, obviously as a society we're learning how to actively support autism in simple things of everyday life, like in school, work pursuits, and our family, and even our circles of our friends. I think some things, there's some good examples about how far that we're able to imagine autism working in all aspects of society today, and it is highly interactive. New play actually just opened on Broadway, and it's actually getting rave reviews. It's actually got 5 stars in the New York Times. Actually called it one of the most fully immersive works to ever wallop Broadway. And it's called The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Night Time. And it was based on a 2003 best-selling book by Mark Haddon. And it's lit up by checkered flashing lights and squares on the stage. It's presented through the eyes of a highly functioning autistic child who is very gifted at mathematics, but yet struggles with daily interactions with friends and family. Just a little bit of background on the book. The play, or I should say the book, has mesmerized a lot of these audiences. And by the end of the play, it's nearly impossible not to be deeply drawn into a completely different reality as seen through the mind of an autistic child. That obviously, you know, this is not an easy feat to pull off, and you know, they just say it's so well worth the journey. So it's really cool, actually, that this is out there. So if anybody has get a chance and they're in New York, this is a great play to see. But you know, a lot more studies are being done every day. You know, and studies are important, and research is important. But Yale did research about how they found signs of autism, as we know, can be seen as early as 18 months in children who have older siblings who are autistic. And this is an important finding, considering that 20% of the children who have older siblings with autism can also develop autism spectrum disorder, which is kind of interesting, you know, because majority of the siblings of children with ASD who do not develop the condition themselves, but for those who do, one of the key priorities is finding a more effective ways of identifying and treating them as early as possible. And that's what they've been studying at the Yale School of Medicine. The scale, it's a large-scale study. It was designed to identify a lot of specific social and communicative behaviors that distinguish infants with autism as early as 18 months. And in this study, the Yale researchers combined data from 8 clinical sites participating in the Baby Siblings Research Consortium, and they looked carefully at the social, communicative, and repetitive behaviors in 719 infants when they were 18 months old. So it's pretty interesting. And the study also, they published in the Journal of American Academy and Child Adolescent Psychology. They the researcher looked at patterns that might predict a later diagnosis of autism. And then they followed up the study when the participants at 8 different locations at the age of 3. And that's actually when Jonathan was diagnosed, more at the age 3.
Mine was 18 months.
Really?
Well, my pediatrician had picked up on it at 18 months. And actually, because my story is different than some other ones, she already said, don't give him the MMR shot. So we already knew he was delayed at 18 months. So there was something going on. Which is interesting, looking back now on my story, because now I have a typical child, and you know the signs were all there, but I didn't know because it was my first child. So,
right,
it's interesting, but
yeah, you know, we were like the opposite, because you know, since Jonathan was our second child, they were saying, well, you know, a lot of times the second child are delayed, and then being a boy, they said, oh, you know, sometimes they're delayed. Because he did have speech and language, and then you know, unfortunately he lost everything,
and
he changed by the age of 3. So, but you know, the study actually reinforces the need of a lot of these repeated diagnostic screenings in the first 3 years of life to identify individual cases of autism spectrum disorder as soon as behavioral symptoms are apparent. So, you know, back then, I mean, you were lucky enough, you know, to have a doctor do that, but for us, you know, basically our doctor was telling us, you know, he's fine, you know, and he's just delayed, you know, and it was nothing to be concerned about. And we waited a whole year, you know, before we actually got a diagnosis. But, you know, also they talk a little bit about the small percentage of the study about eye contact was relatively normal, actually.
Oh, really?
Because that was, yeah, that's interesting, because you think most of the things doctors say, well, you know, autism is poor eye contact and lack of communicative gestures or imaginative play, and strongly associated with a lot of times later diagnosis of autism is what they found. But they also begin to display early signs of repetitive behaviors and had limited nonverbal communication skills. So not only do they have behavioral symptoms appear at different ages, but different combinations of early symptoms may predict the diagnostic outcome of autism, they said. And, you know, one of the advantages, real advantages of the early diagnosis is that now they can personalize a treatment that can be developed for your child precisely at the age where significant development is occurring, which in turn can allow the child to develop a lot of meaningful ways to cope with the autism. And obviously, you know, back to this, but the Broadway plays and the media attention that we're, you know, being getting about autism, it's slowly, we have a long way to go, folks, but we're starting to help the public understand of the disorder. And obviously the advances in scientific understanding and signs of autism in early childhood, like the Yale study, it can help parents and a lot of physicians and clinicals to help at intervene at a many, you know, critical times in the child's life. So, but it's interesting, Lynn, you know, these studies are being done all the time, but it seems like, you know, they're finally starting to make some progress and making some real difference in children being born with autism today versus 10 years ago, 12 years ago, 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So they know it's more, definitely much more now. You could tell that they know more. The professionals know more than they did many years ago.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, and everybody has a different story, too.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. It's funny because...
Go ahead.
Like, well, like my story, you know, when I share mine, it's like there's a lot of people that relate to my story that had the same thing. Their child was normally developing, and then all of a sudden they lost speech, their behaviors changed, and they had, you know, a lot of medical problems and illnesses. And it's just very interesting how, you know, everybody has a different scenario, and some children are born with it, and, you know, you can see the difference and stuff, but, you know, you wonder, did, you know, and now there's like studies about, you know, the mothers, did they get the flu shot when they were pregnant and all this other stuff? And they're, you know, it's crazy. I mean, I think if you try to figure it out, you just make yourself a little nuts.
Well, there's so many different theories out there, you know, this and that, and, you know, this may have caused autism, you know.
I know. You can beat yourself up over it. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, I think, you know, like what we try to do here is we try to work with what we have in front of us because, you know, the studies and stuff is important, but it's not helping us today, you know. It might help some children get earlier diagnosis, which is good. But a lot of the other studies and stuff, like, you know, they talk about cures and stuff. It's that's a little bit crazy because that's not going to be anything for you or me.
Right.
You know,
and I always say, what good is it to look back?
Yes, you got to move forward.
It's always been, don't look back, look forward, because you can't do anything about what happened in the past, but you can do, you know, you can be positive for your child going into the future and be there for your child. But, yeah, like my story is completely different from yours, and people, you know, as far as the shots and all that, that's always, you know, the controversial issue.
Right.
And my story was my son didn't even have the MMR shot, so how could I say that I caused it? I actually think he was born with it because his eye contact, when I compare him to my daughter, who is typical, from day one I knew she was okay because I gave her the bottle and she looked straight into my eyes, whereas Michael, my son, did not look at me, but I didn't know that. You know, I didn't even notice it because that was my first.
Right. You don't, I mean, you know, you're not looking for that. You're in love with this child and you're taking care of it. And, you know, you're learning as you go, you know, and you have no idea what normal is, what's not normal, really. I mean, obviously there's mother's intuition about certain things, you know, that something's wrong. But sometimes also I think, you know, we get in denial too. And that's when, you know, we don't get the diagnosis or we don't go to an early intervention specialist because we were afraid of it. And I think that's the big key, is that at that point, if you suspect something, you're better off doing something about it than not doing something about it, because it's only going to benefit your child.
Well, and unfortunately, when I've gone to some of the preschools to talk about, you know, early intervention and how important it is, I've heard the story over and over again that some parents, and if you're listening out there and you suspect anything, a lot of parents are in denial, and that is only going to hinder your child's progress. And they blame the nursery school, or they blame the administrators, or they say there's nothing wrong with my child. I know a few people just, you know, in the community itself that I could tell that there's something wrong with the child because of my experience, and they don't want to hear it, you know. And it's sad when parents do that, because you're only – being in denial is not going to help the child or you. You know, eventually you're going to have to come to terms with it, and it's going to affect your whole life. So, it's sad when parents can't acknowledge that something's wrong, because it's not their fault. You know, it's nobody's fault.
No, it's not their fault. It's definitely not their fault. And like I said, all they're doing is delaying their chance for their child's success by being in denial.
Right.
And you have to, it's not about you. It's about your child.
Right.
And if you get your child help, then you're doing the best thing you can as a parent, and by not doing something is not good.
Right.
So that, I just, you know, want to make that real clear to somebody that, you know, because there's a lot of parents that are on the fence. They've listened to the show and they say, well, you know, I think there's something amiss with my child, but oh, he'll be okay, you know. And you know, that's a mistake, because you need to get your child to an early intervention specialist if he qualifies under the age of 3, obviously here in the tri-state area, or you know, go to your pediatrician, talk to them, and they can make an appointment for a neurologist and do, you know, some testing and stuff. Because, you know, it may not be autism. It may be a sensory processing issue with your child, too. And well, a lot of those things can be fixed.
Michael was diagnosed by a developmental pediatrician. I tell people to go. I don't know if every area has that, but that's who diagnosed my son, Michael. And his pediatrician luckily had a son who had some issues, so she told me to get him diagnosed by a developmental pediatrician. So that way you can see exactly what's wrong and what issues he or she may have. And it might not necessarily be autism. It may be, like you said, sensory or ADD, or there's a lot of these things are similar, but they can tell you as the child is developing. And that's, he was diagnosed at about 22 months by this developmental pediatrician, which back then most doctors would not diagnose until 3.
Right.
So I was lucky that I started early intervention early with him, because this doctor was like, he has autism, he definitely has it, get as much treatment as he can. And at first it was hard, but, you know, we did it, and I'm glad that we did. So, but a developmental pediatrician is also a good person to go to if you're not sure. They can do a full evaluation.
Okay, so, you know, hopefully that helps some parents out there, that, like I said, that might be struggling with something or deciding on, you know, if they're, you know, child does have autism or has some issues, you know, please go and seek the help, because you're helping the child, and you know what, that's the best thing you could do as a parent. And don't be afraid of it either, because living in fear is not a good thing, obviously. And also pride. A lot of times pride gets in the way, I think. You know, you're proud, and parents don't want to, you know, acknowledge that. So anyway, on to a great topic. We got to cover this, because obviously Halloween is right around the corner and everybody's getting ready to go trick-or-treating and getting ready. And we talked about it last week on the program. But I know you have a great question of the week from the Autism Radio Facebook page and the Hope Saves the Day page. So share that with our listeners, what's going on in the autism community.
Okay, well, my question was, everyone's busy preparing for Halloween. What are your plans for Halloween? Does your child with autism enjoy trick-or-treating? Do you let him or her hand out the candy and stay at home? Any special traditions in your home? I got a couple of nice answers, very different varying answers. My son loves Halloween, but then again, he loves every holiday. He picks out his costume and marks off the days. However, it has taken many years for him to understand the rules, so we go over the rules many times. Knock and let the person open the door. No walking into houses. No taking candy. He gets confused when someone says take and to say thank you. We obviously walk right next to him, and usually he's done after about 10 houses, and we say, okay, and that's enough. 2 years ago, due to the weather, our city delayed Halloween a day. Wow, that was a mess to his schedule. We had to let him get dressed up, and then the whole family had to pick separate rooms, and he got to trick-or-treat in the house. Meltdown averted. That was pretty smart, I thought. My daughter cannot eat most candy. Dum-dum lollipops are safe. She wants to be a pirate again, and she wants to go trick-or-treating as long as she doesn't have to touch the food or wear a hat. Normally, we do church trunk-or-treats the week of Halloween to make it less stressful. Her dad will sit in the car with her after she's done, and I take her brother to haunted houses and face painting, etc. Okay, this is the next one. I get my son a costume he can just enjoy playing in. We stay home and hand out candy. He wears his costume and loves seeing other kids. He does get a little hyped up because he eats too much chocolate. My daughter loves Halloween. We only walk 12 houses. She wants to be Cinderella. No, this is another answer now. No, it's just another day here. My daughter doesn't understand what Halloween is anyway, or any other special day. Oh, that's sad. I began taking my son to the mall for trick-or-treating. The stores here have adults waiting with candies and such. Plus, it is a safer option than just going and knocking on a stranger's door. The other thing is the danger of a meltdown if someone does not open their door. The mall is therefore our best option so far. There are many other little trick-or-treatings as well, and he also learns to wait on cue for a few minutes. He hates wearing a costume, so he's usually in plain clothes. I doubt that he gets what this is all about, though. He probably thinks he's just going from store to store to collect candy. I have my daughter dressed up at home, and she's happy. Her siblings want her to be part of the experience. My child enjoys candy and front porch swings, so we often find him making himself at home on someone's front porch swing while the rest of the kids jockey for goodies. We dress my daughter up and walk down 12 houses is all that we have and all that she can handle. And the last answer, we usually go to a carnival, a zoo boo fest, or the mall. Maybe we will hit a house or two in the cul-de-sac. But this year we're flying down to Disneyland, going military space A. We go by the seat of our pants and have learned that things rarely go as planned. Sometimes that's where the fun is, actually. And that was the end. So we got different varying answers there, I think.
No, that's great. And, you know, we just want to thank all their participation, you know, to make the interaction better. And, you know, a lot of times it gives parents out there that are listening an idea, too.
Yeah.
So it's a great thing to do, you know, to get involved with. So
and then I think I just learned that Michael's having a Halloween parade today, and I'm like, oh no, he doesn't have a costume. He's in junior high already. I didn't know they were going to do a Halloween thing for him. So this should be interesting. But yeah, it should be fun. It's a fun holiday, and you just do what you can do. That's, I think, people, you know, they just make the most of it.
No, absolutely. You know, so hopefully they have a great Halloween. We want to, because this is the last chance we have to wish everybody a happy Halloween, and hopefully they're safe and have a great time, and limit to the meltdowns for your child. So we definitely want to give everybody a shout out for that. But also, before we go, Lynn, we need to mention this because it's right around the corner. Tuesday night, October the 28th. We have the most famous horse trainer in the world, who's very, very well beloved in the autism community. Himself is going to be doing a demo for Autism Radio and Equine Tranquility Wellness Center, which we work with, Colleen, and we send a lot of kids to there for horse lessons. He's going to be there at 6:30 on October the 28th in Andover, New Jersey. And he's going to do a full demo, and also we're going to have the Horse Boy, the movie, as well. So if you have the movie at home, bring it with you, and you have an opportunity to get a picture with Rupert Isaacson himself and also get an autograph, his copy of his book, or his whatever you'd like. So it's going to be really cool. People are getting really excited about this. And, you know, I'm excited about it. I've actually interviewed Rupert many, many years ago, and we talked about having him come out, and it just didn't work out. We never could get the date, or we couldn't get the space, or whatever it was, for whatever reason. It just never happened, and now this year, here he's coming. And so hopefully everybody out there that hears the broadcast will say, hey, you know what, I would love to meet Rupert Isaacson. And for anybody that's seen The Horse Boy, the movie, it's a major inspiration for many, because, as you know, he has a son who had autism who, when he got on a horse, started to speak again. And, you know, he created this whole specific horseback riding program that he traveled the world, and anybody that's seen the movie, and found out the secrets of what actually works to do this for a child and why this works. And he went across the world seeking answers. And it's just an amazing movie. If you haven't seen The Horse Boy, definitely check it out. I believe it's on Netflix right now. So if you're on Netflix, you can definitely check it out. I just think it's a great film, and like I said, he's just such an amazing individual. And we also want to shout out a huge thank you for Rupert for coming out and supporting Autism Radio, and also coming out to Equine Tranquility Wellness Center, because he's also going to certify our very own Colleen O'Day in the Horse Boy Method. So we will have the first center, Autism Radio and Equine Wellness Center, to have the first center here in New Jersey that is Horse Boy Therapy certified. And that's a huge, huge accomplishment. So we're very excited to be able to bring that to Colleen, and also bring it for Autism Radio, and also to all residents that are here in New Jersey have a unique opportunity. And also, we have to mention, too, that Colleen and Equine Tranquility Wellness Center went out to the Special Olympics competition last weekend, and it's Team Hope, which we sponsored this team, which is Autism Radio, and we actually have 12 kids that are going to be competing next year, so we're really excited about that, And we just want to let everybody know about it and also hope support Autism Radio and make a donation, because all this money goes to these programs to help these kids. You know, we work with the Special Olympics and they do supply some things, but not everything. And there's still a tremendous amount of costs involved that are not covered, and we cover those expenses, so it makes it free for the families to be able to do this. So without your donations, we wouldn't be able to continue these programs. So please go to autismradio.org and make a pledge today. Any dollar amount doesn't matter, because it all helps. We get about 90 cents to the dollar, and that's really important because we're a group of all volunteers. So we're real proud of that. So Lynn, hopefully Lynn will be there on the 28th. So, you know, I will be there. So you have a chance to meet both me and my co-host today, Lynn, if you guys come out to this event. So we hope to see you all there. So I want to thank everybody, as always, for the continued support here on the program on Autism Radio, and also our show here, Hope Saves the Day. And we wish everybody a great week and a happy Halloween to everyone. Lynn, I know you want to give a quick shout out to everyone.
Happy Halloween, everybody, and thanks for listening.
Yes, and thanks for joining us again, Lynn, today. And
thank
we
you.
And we thank all our listeners, obviously, for your continued support here on the program. I would like to wish everybody a great week and thank everybody again for everything that they do to make Autism Radio a very huge success and make difference in children's lives and families' lives, because we're changing them every day. And wish everybody a great week, as always. And remember, everyone, until next time, hope saves the day. Good night, everyone.
Every time I see your smile, I wonder what you feel. Every time you laugh or cry, I wonder if it's real. You seem trapped inside. Please help me understand, what is your world like? I want to feel your love. I want to know what it's like to laugh and play. Imagine a thought that you cannot feel, a tear trapped inside. Imagine a sound that you cannot make, no matter how hard you try. I want you to know how I'm feeling. I want you to know how it feels to be me. I wish you could look into my world and see how I see. Hold my hand and remind me to hold on to hope each day. Let this song be my voice. Remember, hope saves the day. I want to show you what I see. What kind of life will I have? What's in store for me? Don't be afraid, just love and hold me. I can be all that I can be. With your love I can do anything. With your love I can see the world. Like rays of light shine upon me, inside of me, yeah. Then you are right by my side. I will love you till the end of time. Hold my hand and remind me to hold on to hope each day. Let this song be my voice. And remember, hope saves the day.